Apple tries to launch the iPhone 4S in China and ends up with egg on his face.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. When you think of companies that really get consumers, Apple has to be up there. So what happened today in China comes as a surprise. Apple had to halt iPhone sales there after a disastrous and violent launch. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz joins us now from Shanghai to explain what happened. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Jeremy.
So they were supposed to unveil the iPhone 4S. What happened?
Well, people waited in line all night, both at their stores in Shanghai and Beijing, and at the store in Beijing, the Apple crew in that store decided that the crowd looked a little too unruly, and they just announced 15 minutes after they were supposed to open that they weren't going to sell the iPhones, which led people into sort of a frenzy,
yeah.
A barrage of eggs and things that were thrown at the store. So it wasn't a pretty picture.
And this is not the first time that Apple has had a botched launch of a product in China. I read that the iPad 2, there was a similar situation.
Right. Last year at the launch of the iPad 2, there was a fist fight at the same store, and a store window was smashed in the process of that.
Now, this doesn't sound so unusual that there would be a big frenzy when one of these big Apple products comes out, but does it signal some kind of a misunderstanding about the China market by Apple?
Well, I think that when you talk to folks who look at the China market, that's exactly what they say, that Apple does underestimate their own popularity here in China. Of the 300 stores that Apple has globally, only 5 of them are in China. And that's despite the fact that China is now its second biggest market to the United States. And so that's not great representation, shall we say.
Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz. Rob, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Now to New Jersey, where the governor has just signed a bill to allow private firms to run some public schools. The move comes less than 2 weeks after the state of Ohio privatized several state prisons. For more on this wave of privatization, let's bring in Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, Chris, privatization of public space has been going on for a long time in this country, at least since the Reagan years. Is it happening a lot more now?
Oh, Jeremy, it's happening a lot more now. Now, part of it is, you know, state and local governments are under enormous pressure, so they need to raise money, so they'll privatize some public housing, maybe the parks. I mean, they're moving all over, but it really came home to me last weekend. I was at a conference, Mark Udoff, president of the University of California, and he was bemoaning and talking about the privatization of the public university, you know, the sense that, yes, you get a degree, you get lifetime earnings, that's a really good thing, therefore you should pay more, but he's worried about that trend.
Well, obviously, these organizations, whether they be universities or governments, are doing this because they are low on cash, as you say. Is there any way around this, Chris?
Oh, yes, there is, because in an earlier era, there was a lot more taxpayer support. There was a lot more public support. The public university isn't just a private good. It also is about being citizens, about the knowledge in our society, innovation, creativity, you know, everybody moving up together. And so what, you know, I worry about, whether you're looking at universities or parks or even things like prisons, you know, are we losing the sense of a social good, a social compact, the commonwealth, that we're all in this together?
Well, is anybody pushing back against this in a big way?
I think there's an enormous pushback going on. Now, privatization isn't exactly on the tip of everyone's tongue, but 99% is. And it's part of this discussion. What's the good of private equity? What do we do about income inequality? How about social mobility? Has privatization gone too far? This is all part of an important, dynamic discussion that's going on in our society.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell. Chris, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are higher in overseas trading this morning, up almost 2% in Singapore and about 0.3% right now in London. We've got word of at least one industry, though, that did not do well in December, the video game industry, which saw retail sales plunge 21%. The drop is being blamed on a lack of exciting new hardware and a trend toward cheaper mobile gaming. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow bounced up 21 points to close at 12,471.
Thank you.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
The University of Connecticut said this week that one of its scientists falsified data in a new study about red wine. The study found that drinking red wine slowed the aging process. Marketplace's Eve Tro has more.
Worst case scenario, one specific wine grape compound in the corrupted study turns out not to be a silver bullet. Best case scenario, plenty of studies still show that drinking some wine is a net positive, says Leslie Nolan at Radial Research.
We may not know how it works, but we feel pretty confident that a small amount of wine every day is for most people beneficial from a health standpoint.
She says American consumers often cling to health studies to justify things that are simply everyday pleasures in other cultures.
Making it okay to consume something we liked and we're doing anyway has obvious appeal to a lot of us. I mean, who's going to falsify data that says broccoli's really, really, really good for you?
Americans have been drinking more wine for 17 years straight, says Gladys Horiucci at the advocacy group The Wine Institute. But raising a glass to your health is not a primary market driver.
I think most people are choosing it because they simply like the taste and how it improves food and the overall dining experience.
Besides, by federal law, winemakers can't advertise any medical benefit for their Pinot, Cabernet, or Syrah. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
And finally to the UK, where a storm is brewing over the apostrophe. The British bookstore chain Waterstones, that's Waterstone apostrophe S, has used that apostrophe in its name since its founding more than 30 years ago. But now the company is shedding the apostrophe because it says in a digital world of URLs and email addresses, Waterstones without the apostrophe is more practical. That's not going down well with John Richards, who runs, no joke, the Apostrophe Protection Society. He says the bookstore could learn a thing or two about the English language from the apostrophe haven that is McDonald's. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.